This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 25th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 357. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, it's an end of August doubleheader. First, Canada's best Gaelic football, hurling, and camogie players are coming to Burnaby, BC on Labor Day weekend. My first guest is Ronan Dean, the co-organizer of the Canadian Gaelic Athletic Association National Championships. He will preview the Festival of Ireland's National Sports at Burnaby Lake Sports Complex on August 31st and September 1st. Then I welcome back Jim Mullen, the president of Football Canada and general secretary of the International Federation of American Football. He is in Finland, where Canada's best flag football players are competing for the world championship of a sport that will debut in the LA 28 Olympics. And Canadian football fans have their eyes on Victoria, where the first touchdown Pacific between the Ottawa Red Blacks and BC Lions is happening August 31st. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. That's the iconic theme music for the Sunday game, composed by James Last. The Sunday game is the GAA Game of the Week on RTE, Ireland's national public broadcaster. Coming Labor Day weekend to Burnaby, Burnaby Lake Sports Complex, Canada's Gaelic football, hurling, and camogie championships. The national sports of Ireland are played worldwide and across Canada, Newfoundland, Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia, Quebec, Ontario, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and here in British Columbia. The Canadian Gaelic Athletic Association, better known as GAA, their Canadian National Championship 2024 runs August 31st and September 1st. And my guest on this edition is Ronan Dean of the Canadian National Championship Organizing Committee. He's been active for many years in the Vancouver Irish Sport and Social Club. And this is a big event happening. You've got teams from across Canada. You've also got a team from New York, the Liberty Gaels. How many players are expected, and what is the format?
It is mind-boggling in scale, Bob. It's a huge event. We're expecting over 1,000 players. We're expecting over 50 teams to tog out, and those 50 teams come from clubs all over Canada, and approximately 22 separate clubs represented at the event, and they hail from as far away in Canada as Halifax and as far away as New York for Liberty Gaels, who are bringing camogie teams here. It's going to be an all-inclusive tournament in the sense that there will be ladies and men's competition in Gaelic football and ladies Gaelic football, hurling and camogie, which is the ladies' version of hurling. And it's so significant indeed that the presidents of the Gaelic Athletic Association worldwide is coming, the president of the Camogie Association and the president of the Ladies Gaelic Football Association are coming as well. As well as the chair of Ulster as an organization with counties in Ireland and clubs in Ireland, has the remit of looking after the Canadian county board. And that may be funny for your listenership, that Canada is viewed as a county in terms of the Gaelic Athletic Association. And it's a really fast-growing county with really serious quality on display. It's the second time the championships have ever been held. The first were held in Toronto, Toronto being the hotbed of Gaelic games in Canada for the longest time. Although we are beginning to see a bit of a shift towards the West in recent years, with eight clubs, nine clubs if you count our underage club, Vancouver Lekela. But the GA is growing very strong in Canada right now.
Yeah, with that many people from that many places, this makes it one of the biggest sporting championships of the year here in BC, and I think definitely in Burnaby, where it's being held. Gaelic football is played by two teams of 15. It predates soccer and rugby. It's also got elements of basketball and volleyball. 1 point awarded for sending the ball above the crossbar and three into the goal below. Crossbars are not dissimilar to rugby or football crossbar, and hurling. The women's version's camogie. It's Ireland's other national field sport. Some historians say it's 2,000 years old, and it might have given birth to hockey, Canada's national sport. What else should people know about these sports before they come to Burnaby Lake Sports Complex to see this this action over 2 days on Labor Day weekend?
On a very basic level, both sports are high scoring. They're free flowing. They're played on fields that look like soccer fields, although they're a bit bigger. As you say, up to 15 players on the field. It'll be a little bit modified for some of the competition at this tournament, but it's a fast flowing. Both sports are fast flowing, relatively high scoring. Hurling is normally higher scoring. That's the stick sport. And you were right to mention that there's connections between hurling and hockey. On the face of it, hurling looks a lot like ice hockey. The ball travels really fast. Players wear helmets. They have a stick. But interestingly enough, when we hit the ball in hurling with that stick, we say we puck the ball. And puck is an unusual word, and it shows up in hockey as well. Camogie is the ladies' version of hurling. They used to be quite dissimilar a few years ago, but modern times, the ladies' game is essentially the very same as men's hurling. So now they're so they and they have their own association. Gaelic football then is a ball sport, round ball, a bit like basketball or volleyball or soccer. But the way you pass the ball looks a bit like basketball or volleyball, and again, it's a tough sport. There's physical contact, and but the ball travels far, and it's relatively high scoring as well. You get about the same amount of goals in a Gaelic football game as you get in a soccer game. So that's the 3 pointers that you mentioned. But they also you have the opportunity to put the ball over the bar too, and sometimes a team will get a few goals, but another team will get a lot of points and win the game. So Gaelic football and hurling, they're the two main sports of the Gaelic games. Round is another one, handball is another one, but we won't be playing these at this tournament. And maybe something for the historians out there. Gaelic has to do with Ireland. And at a time when Ireland was struggling for national identity and was was under colonial rule, the Gaelic Athletic Association became a very important piece of Irish politics and identity. And really, in many ways, it's about 125 years old. The Gaelic Athletic Association predates the formation of the Irish nation formally. But Gaelic Athletic Association and Irish history are intertwined in a very complex and intricate way.
And really, the cathedral for the sports is Croke Park, the big stadium in Dublin, which I had the pleasure to visit 10 years ago. A very famous place. It comes alive every year. People from around Ireland descend on Croke Park every year for the Gaelic football and hurling and camogie championships.
I think people would find it interesting that at the end of July, the hurling final and the football finals, the European Championships was on, the soccer. A lot of people were watching that. The South America Cup was on as well. But the biggest attended tournament, biggest attended matches of July in the world were for the hurling and the Gaelic football. Over 80,000 people crammed into the stadium on each day to watch amateurs playing Ireland's national sports. So I think that's a wild statistic when you think about how small the country of Ireland is on the world stage. But we are very proud and fiercely passionate about our games.
And the team from County Armagh won the football championship on July 28th. That's significant because Jarla Burns, president of the Gaelic Athletic Association, who'll be one of your guests, is from County Armagh. Of course, the other guest you made reference to, Ciara McLaughlin, the World GAA chairperson and Ulster GAA chairperson. Of course, Ulster is the umbrella for the county that includes Canada. And they'll be welcomed to Burnaby Lake Sports Complex by the mayor of Burnaby, Mike Hurley himself, who is originally from Derry. So lots of interesting connections there.
Absolutely, and the club connections are being spoken up quite a bit. Lavie Club is Mickey Hurley, the mayor of Burnaby's club back home. Mind you, I would say he's longer with the Vancouver ISSC as a member. He's been in Canada since 1985, so I believe he's with the ISSC longer than he was with his home club back in Derry. But Derry and Armagh rivalries are very strong and passionate. So I hope the two guys behave themselves when they connect in a week or two.
The history of GAA in Vancouver is quite something. You have had quite a growth spurt in recent years, especially. And 2024 is actually quite a big year for GAA in Vancouver. It was founded 50 years ago. You've got about 1,200 members, 9 clubs now. Tell me how it has grown over the half century.
Yeah, so in the 60s there had been emigration to BC, and there had been teams here. The Sons of Erin was a team that used to play here. 74, the ISSC was formally founded, the Irish Sporting and Social Club, and it was meant to be more than just a Gaelic Games club, but it morphed into being solely a Gaelic Games club. In the early years, there were games between Edmonton and Calgary and Seattle. And in the early days, the winner of what was called the Northwest Pacific Division used to attend North American championships in the States. That's changed over the years. It's changed quite significantly. In 2003, in 2002, the Canada GAA formally took over the. It, became affiliated with the Western Canada Division, which included Vancouver, Edmonton, and Calgary. And a division existed in the West that included those three clubs for a number of years. There was one or two other clubs came in. But Vancouver has really morphed around the time of the big downturn in the world economies in 2007 and 8. That triggered a bunch of emigration from Ireland in a way that I don't think we had seen before. I think London and New York, maybe Sydney had seen the likes of it, but Canada had never seen it. And since 2008, there have been sharp increases in the numbers of Irish in Toronto and in Vancouver. And in the last 5 or 6 years, a stark increase in the numbers of Irish coming to BC specifically. And with that, the Vancouver ISSC, a one club, one city town, that had to change. And there was a couple of splits, and there was a couple of new clubs formed. And in a relatively short span, I believe Fraser Valley Gael celebrated its 10th anniversary. That was the second club in BC. So ISSC 50 years, Fraser Valley Gaels 10 years. And in the last 5 or 6 years, another six or seven have popped up. And when I say seven, six teams competing in the Vancouver division, which is now a separate division all on its own in Canada. There is also a youth club, and I will say something significantly about the youth, and hopefully there will be some youth games at this championships. About a month ago, the Vancouver Lekela team went to Kelowna and played against kids from Edmonton and Calgary. So there is a growing youth program as well, if any of your listenership wants to get their kids involved. Really good fun games, and kids love picking up a hurley. Yeah, so there you go. That's Vancouver. It's unrec. I came out to Vancouver in 2001, and at that time there was seven or eight people playing Gaelic games, and now we've got seven or eight clubs. And last Saturday I was at Burnaby Lake for the Vancouver Division Football Championship finals, and the football being played was fantastic. If you went back to Ireland, you would be hard pressed to find football being played better than what we saw last Sunday right here in Vancouver. So that's special, and as an Irish Canadian, it's so nice to see those developments.
Yep, so the Canadian National Championships for Gaelic football, hurling, and camogie, Burnaby Lake Sports Complex, August 31st, September 1st.
Essentially, it's a festival of sport. So on Saturday and Sunday, from games could start as early as 8:30 in the morning. We're doing final tweaks on the schedule, but it could start as early as 8:30 in the morning. But all day until it gets dark on Saturday, and hopefully not until it gets dark on Sunday, there will be games being played. There's four fields at Burnaby Lake, rugby fields. So there's four fields there that we're configuring to be Gaelic football and hurling fields. There's going to be women's and men's competition in both sports, and there's going to be several levels. So, we're hoping there's not going to be any blowouts. We're matching the standards in junior, intermediate, and senior. So they're all adult grade, but senior being the best, intermediate being awfully close to senior, but not quite as good, and then junior. So we're going to have 12 separate championships going on, to match grades and genders. So it's a big tournament. I've never been involved in a tournament this size before. It's daunting and exciting. There will be a beer garden there. There will be some entertainment. There will be some society set up there as well, with information for people who are curious about Irish history and the Irish diaspora. But if you love sport, come on down. I'm fascinated when people just I see them at these games walking by, and they stop and they're like, "What is going on?" But they are just in awe at the skill levels and some of the things these players can do with this ball, either with the stick and ball or with the football. They're familiar looking sports because you've seen elements of those sports in whatever sport you play yourself. But if you like baseball, if you like hockey, get down there and watch the hurling and camogie. If you like rugby, basketball, football, soccer, get down and watch the Gaelic football. I think you'll be very impressed. And if you have a lick of Irish in you, if you went on ancestry.ca and you found out you've got 1% of Irish, get down there and you'll see something very clearly about what makes Irish and Irishness unique when you see these sports.
Thanks again for joining us, Ronan Dean, and best of luck for the tournament itself. And hopefully the weather will cooperate because it sounds like you've got a great plan together.
Looking forward to it, Bob. I hope to see you down there.
That's the BC Lions fight song, Roar You Lions Roar, by the late great bandleader Dal Richards. And in keeping with our football theme is Jim Mullen, the president of Football Canada, who is joining us from Bowen Island. Most recently, the Olympic flag was passed from Paris to Los Angeles, the countdown to the LA28 Olympics, and the debut of flag football as an Olympic sport is underway. And the first big step towards that is actually in Finland, the IFAF World Flag Football Championship in Lahti, Finland. Jim, tell me more about this tournament, who's playing, and how important this is in the road to LA.
Well, the World Championships in Finland, I'm attending there as the General Secretary of IFAF and also the play-by-play voice on the final days of the World Tournament. So I'm looking forward to calling a different type of football for the football world, as we'll have the men's and women's finals and the bronze medal games. And, the NFL is really stepping up in this case in terms of adding some production value and some presentation. So I think this is the first step to flag football as an international force, getting serious on the international stage. That's one of the things that is really encouraging at this point. I think that flag football has gone through a very rapid process when you think about it, going from 0 to 100 and going from essentially a recreational sport. There's no pro leagues out there, and there's no world tour per se for flag football, and so it's gone from recreational with pay to play national teams and periodic world championships to a sport now that needs real structure moving forward. And structure comes in the form of tournaments, competitions, continental competitions, governance. We started taking those steps last year. We had a tournament of the Americas in North Carolina in just searing, unrelenting heat, where Canada finished third on the women's side and fourth on the men's side. I'd say from a Canadian perspective, Football Canada has a lot of work to do in this space. Most of the nations around the world pick a true national team. Football Canada in the past and leading up to this tournament lets a club team, a club national team from a competition, end up representing the country. So we have a men's and women's club championship, and those teams are essentially the Trail Smoke Eaters from 1961 representing the country. That's not good enough anymore. So Football Canada and the staff are going through a process of finding out what makes a great flag football player. First of all, so whether that's through various testing, various combines, Royal Bank has a program where they evaluate athletes based on certain measurables from other sports that may be able to come across. It's called Royal Bank Training Ground. We've investigated that. We're still not subject to own the podium money, and we won't be for about another year. How we finish at this 2024 World Championship will have an effect on that. So the better we finish, the more development money we're subject to. That's key. For the women's team, if they finish in the top seven, they will go to the World Games in China next year. So that's another important developmental piece for them as well. I think one of the big questions around flag is on the men's side, which is who will compete on a Canadian team or on an American team or on any team by the time we get to 2028. It will be a fairly small and limited field. I'm not in a position to say how many teams, but I think people will be surprised on how few teams will be in the Olympic competition. So Canada has to qualify first. But if they do qualify, will there be CFL players on that team? Will they actually stop the CFL season for 2 weeks to allow for that? Is there a path for them to do that? Will there be NFL players on the team? With the timing of the tournament, there is certainly a window for veteran players who will not have to report to camp until the end of the Olympics to be a part of a Team USA. Or there are international players, of course. We have 28 players in the NFL from Canada. Maybe there's players that are in the NFL right now as we speak that could be playing for Canada at the Olympic Games on with our men's team, like John Metchie III, the guy that won the Cornish Trophy twice, who's with the Houston Texans. That's just one example. So lots of questions on the road in front of us. I'm sure there's not going to be a straight line for the sport as it closes in on a 4-year window towards the Olympics. I can spell out that 2024 will help create seeding in the world through this world competition on both the men's and women's side. 2025, outside of that World Games piece that I mentioned, there will be continental competitions that will position nations for a 2026 World Championship, and that'll be the first phase of qualifying for the Olympics. So it's projected right now, not finalized, that the top three teams from 26 will qualify for 28, and then there will be some kind of tournament in 27 to determine the balance of the teams that didn't hit the podium in 26. So it'll be a busy time for IFAF and FLAG, and I'm looking forward to being a part of it through my role in IFAF.
Now, the international football world will be focused during the last week of August on Finland, but the Canadian football world will be focusing for the first time on Victoria, the first Touchdown Pacific, coming August 31st to Victoria's Royal Athletic Park. A city normally known for rugby is now getting its due in Canadian football. And this just happens a few short weeks after Victoria-born Nathan Rourke returns to the BC Lions after trying out for several teams in the NFL. This is also the first time the BC Lions are playing on grass in their home province. For the first time since 1969, that was the last year that grass was installed at Empire Stadium. What do you think of this, the spectacle match being played at Royal Athletic Park, and how it might elevate the sport on Vancouver Island and maybe the rest of the province to have the Lions outside in a small stadium on grass?
I think it's fantastic, actually. And I think it's great for Amar Doman. The Doman name is big on Vancouver Island, of course, if you've followed the history of that family and the company along the way. So it's a great reinvestment in community, in my opinion. The one group that I feel sorry for in all of this is the Victoria Harbour Cats that have been forced out of their park, and they're playing their playoff games in Nanaimo after a fantastic year. So, you know, there was one eviction that was involved in this, so the timing didn't work out very well for them, unfortunately. That being said, for the sport of football, especially in Southern Vancouver Island, this is a tremendous boost in the arm. We know that the Victoria Rebels or the West Shore Rebels have been active there. Never anything on the university side. I think the last time they played a professional game there was the Continental Football League. There's a team there in the 60s, the Victoria Steelers. I think then they were renamed the Victoria Tyees that played at Royal Athletic Park, I think, till 1969. You might want to fact check me on that, but it's been a long time since professional football touched down in Victoria. And with the size of the marketplace, just under 500,000, it's really a market that, if it's developed well enough, could be that 10th team in the Canadian Football League. If you really want to wrap your head around it, there's certainly space for a professional team of that level to be accommodated in that marketplace. Government towns aren't as flexible when it comes to adopting professional sports, especially when people are from other places that come into that town. They don't have those same allegiances. But For a spectacle, I couldn't think of a better way for Nathan Rourke to get on the winning track on a quote unquote home field than in a place where he was born, Victoria. That makes it a fantastic story. And if we go all the way back to the FIFA U20, I believe, that was played in Victoria in the very same place, this will be a similar footprint to the temporary stadium that was built there. I think that one of the byproducts of this, I know we have some interested people in BC going back to the flag football piece now, saying, how do we bring the continental flag tournament for IFAF here in 2025? And the place they're looking at is Royal Athletic Park as a place to do that. So those are the types of momentum pieces that can be generated by this. And I think this might actually start something for the BC Lions in terms of creating pop-up events around BC. This is something that that they might be able to do in Kelowna. This is something that they might be able to do in Kamloops, for example. Those are places where they might be able to take games. And don't forget, during the FIFA World Cup, the Lions may be looking to play some home games, not in their home of BC Place Stadium. So this may provide a potential beta test and a working solution for them to taking some of their games on the road.
Well, thanks again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast to talk about all things Canadian football, either on the grid and the grass in Victoria or Canada and its hopes to play in Los Angeles 2028. And the road to Los Angeles 2028 is going through Finland, where the IFAF World Flag Football Championships are happening until August 31st. Thanks again.
Thank you, Bob.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Japan helps Hualien detect sinkholes after earthquake. The magnitude 7.2 trembler on April 3rd caused the collapse of buildings and inflicted severe damage on roads, bridges, and rail tracks across Hualien County. The disaster also dealt a massive blow to the region's status as one of the country's prime tourism destinations. GeoSearch Company Limited sent a team to Hualien to deploy ground-penetrating radar on 54 Hualien roads. In ABC News Australia, Tesla's reputation in Australia is tanking, with sales down and some buyers turned off by Elon Musk. Tesla's brand health is now in negative territory. EV groups say Tesla CEO Elon Musk has alienated potential buyers with his inflammatory rhetoric and support for known climate denier Donald Trump. The EV buying demographic is shifting from early adopters who are generally loyal to Tesla to a broader segment who can access a wider range of non-Tesla models. In Hong Kong Free Press, Beijing tells Hong Kong-based consular officials to seek approval before visiting Macau and Guangdong. 10 days in advance, consulates will need to send a note to the Chinese authorities explaining the reasons for any business trips to the Greater Bay Area, detailing the personnel, times, and venues involved, according to a letter seen by the Hong Kong Free Press.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, the number of new private security guards is soaring and many are armed. Figures obtained from an Oregon state agency under a public records request show the growth. The total number of certified security guards in Oregon is up 13% from 2019, the last pre-pandemic year. The number of security guards licensed to carry a firearm, for instance, is up 39% over the same period, and the number of newly trained security guards is up 38% from before the pandemic, with all the growth coming in the past year. In Crosscut, Washington State Patrol admits losing an unknown amount of public records. The patrol said a data migration failure last year led to the permanent deletion of those documents. Internal communications reviewed by Cascade PBS warned that hundreds of thousands of emails were potentially missing. Emails regarding audits, policy changes, accreditations, and claims are also missing, as are certain vaccine mandate emails. And in the Breaker.news, read these stories behind the headlines. Surrey Langley SkyTrain price skyrockets, and CBSA and RCMP tight-lipped about video showing recovery of stolen vehicles at Vancouver Port. Read all about it in the Breaker.news.
That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.news podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the people at the Pacific Institute for Sport Education, a legacy of the 1994 Victoria Commonwealth Games. 30 years ago this month, the games ran from August 18th to 28th, 1994, in Victoria, BC. 2,500 athletes from 63 nations in 10 sports.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.news podcast for the week of August 25th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 25th of August in 1944, 80 years ago, Allied forces liberated Paris from the Nazis? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow the Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support the Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.